Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey,
let me play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
To this installment of What's Hot, I'm Brian Yoder, joined by Chris Carter, and this is the second installment of What's Hot. We debuted last week, and we are back for week two, and we have a lot on the docket to discuss. Obviously, the hot topic has been the Tom Brady situation. It came out because of the results of the Wells report that Tom Brady will miss the first four games of the 2015 season. The Patriots were also docked $1 million and a first and fourth round draft pick. So we will discuss that, Chris and I. We'll also delve into more Steeler matters, the rookie camp, how that's going for our guys. And Chris and I actually made predictions on the BCSC website this week about what we think is going to happen with our rookies this season. So we'll get you our predictions. Also, Ed Reed retired a month after the other great safety of his time did, Troy Polamalu. We'll discuss maybe the possibility of both then ending up in the same Hall of Fame class. So we've got Tom Brady talking about the Steelers rookies, Ed Reed. We also want to delve into the 1975 Steelers. This year will be the 40th anniversary of that team, the Steelers team that won the squad's second Super Bowl title. They won Super Bowl 10, 21-17 over the Cowboys. So despite Chris and I not being alive to experience that, we're history buffs, especially when it comes to the Steelers, and we will discuss the top moments from the 75 Steelers team. And last but not least, Antonio Brown made it to the final four of the Madden covered competition. He did not get it. Odell Beckham actually did. But we'll discuss whether you're happy or not happy with Antonio Brown not getting on the cover, because as we all know, athletes that normally do grace that cover fall victim to the Madden jinx. But without further ado, let's get the show started. And Chris, how you doing today, bud?
I'm all right. And yourself, Brian?
Oh, I'm great, man. I'm great. Always ready to talk Steelers football. Reminder, too, you can listen to our show on iTunes. And the iTunes link, just type in the standard is the standard. And then once you get in there, you'll see our show titled What's Hot. Fans are also encouraged to call in at any time during the show at 347-850-8581. Once again, callers, dial up, dial in at 340-850-8581. So, Chris, getting started here, everybody's talking about the Tom Brady thing. If you go on our website, I think the last 3 days, almost every single article is about the Tom Brady situation. And again, he will not be the starting quarterback at this time when the Steelers face New England in week one. It's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo. I did a little story about him on the website a couple of days ago, and he seems like a pretty decent quarterback, but he's not Tom Brady, and very few people
right.
are. So, Chris, I guess talk about your reaction when the news came out, and what do you think is going to happen after Tom Brady tries to fight the allegations against him in the four-game suspension?
Well, you know, there's a lot of news talk today about how he went and got, you know, a really strong attorney team, and he's going after as many people that can support him and try to get him out. And a lot of New England fans are really excited about this team that he put together. But in my opinion, it is when you look over the report, there's not – they keep saying that it overstepped itself, or that it didn't prove anything. And what people have to realize, the report didn't have to prove anything. By a preponderance of the evidence, more probable than not, these are the standards of which that needed to be set here by the information provided on whether or not the Patriots, people within the Patriots organization, deflated footballs intentionally, and whether or not Tom Brady knew about it. You don't need to have you don't need to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. You need to prove it to a point where it's more likely that it did happen than it didn't happen. And that's what this report did. And you can talk about the science all you want, and people want to talk about the weather and whether or not that impacted some of the balls more than what might have happened with it. But you got a guy calling himself later on his text messages with other people. And, you know, another thing that you look into it, Tom Brady and a lot of the Patriots fans are saying, oh, well, you know, he was asked to surrender his phone. Would you ever surrender your phone? He's like, no, that's not true. And Mr. Wells came out, Ted Wells came out and said, because he defended his report today, and I believe it was on the Monday Morning Quarterback blog for Sports Illustrated, when he was saying that he never asked for his phone. He just asked for his communications with Jastrzemski. So that's another exaggeration on the argument for Tom Brady in this instance. I really think that everything that you read in the report about that leads to the probability that Tom Brady knew. Well, again, they got to prove two things: that one, it was intentional upon the two guys, McNally and Jastrzemski, and two, that Tom Brady more likely than not knew about what they were doing. So when you look at that and the information provided, it's really hard to knock it, in my opinion. But who knows? You never know with what legal teams can pull up. When I'm looking at this, I see that the preponderance of the evidence standard is met. You know, people can talk about what they want. I think that Mr. Wells has presented a really good defense of his own information. And, again, he said put up or shut up to Brady's agent, Don E. He said, you know, if you guys have this great information that proves your innocence, please bring it out. So, you know, who knows? Maybe they have something. Maybe they're cooking up something. There's something we don't know. There's communications out there that we haven't been privy to yet. But until that time, it looks really bad. You know, they can appeal it, and maybe it gets brought down to two. But as far as I've seen, this report was not this report was objective in finding what it found about the investigation.
Right, and I think, to me, it brings up a couple questions. You know, first of all, you know, did Tom Brady know that the balls were deflated to that amount? And, you know, I've watched a lot of, you know, ESPN and SportsCenter, and I know Jeff Flake came out and said it's not abnormal for quarterbacks to mess with the balls. And, you know, I think we can all agree that quarterbacks are pretty anal when it comes to, you know, everything that goes into their footballs. And I'm pretty sure he knew, you know, the detail of how deflated his footballs were, because, again, that's how he makes his livelihood. That's how he makes millions of dollars. That's how, you know, that decides how, you know, successful he is on Sundays. Is that football, whether he can grip it, whether he can throw it in the wind, in the rain. That Colts game was in the rain. So it just kind of, I don't know, it just seems to me like at some point, don't you just kind of give us some sort of admittance of fault? Like, yeah, you know, I knew that we were deflating the balls a little bit. This is how I like to grip it. I didn't know that we had it to a degree where it was illegal by the odds of the NFL. I didn't know we had deflated them that much. You know what I mean? It's just like, I think that's where I think people are starting to get upset. It's kind of like, Tom, owe us something. Because, you know, I don't. There's a lot of gray going on. I mean, still, there's not concrete evidence Tom Brady knew. I mean, it even says so in Troy Vincent's, you know, suspension documents. It says in there, he's the president of the NFLPA. It says in there, you know, we believe, you know, it didn't say without a shadow of a doubt, but it said, you know, beyond considerable thought that you knew what was going on and you knew what was happening with the football. There still isn't that definitive white and black you knew. So I think the issue, and again, he's trying to fight to play in more games and try to cut down that four-game suspension, so he's not going to admit any guilt yet. But when this whole thing ends, I think that's what people are hoping for, is that Tom, just own up to it a little bit. You know, it's like those guys, Lee, that have been like, you know, I remember Sean Merriman a few years ago got busted for, you know, using legal substance, I think it was some sort of steroid. Mm-hmm. And he admitted it, he served a suspension, and he moved on. There's another case since then. I mean, I think, you know, when you look at athletes in today's age, you know, they're all going to make mistakes. Some of them are going to cross the line. But I think the biggest thing I've learned watching sports is own up to it right away, take your punishment like a man, and the public will be quicker to forgive you because you just at least own up to your mistakes.
I agree. I agree entirely. And I think that's the biggest thing. If Brady had told me, when he was first asked about this, he said he had no idea, he has no knowledge of this, none whatsoever, and Now it comes out, all this information, and the report comes out that Strumsey was communicating with you. You refused to reveal your communications with him, and there's communications between the two about what, I mean, McNally literally says, I want a signed autograph jersey and autograph balls. I want money and this, that, and the third. And there's videos of Brady giving him certain items that were requested. You know, it's tough to – it makes him look bad. And I think if he had come out and said, oh, wait, sorry, you know, we thought we could do this, then it would have been like, oh, well, you got caught doing something wrong. But when you try to cover it up, when you try to make it look like you're innocent, that's going to make it worse when you know, the information is publicized like it has been.
Right.
And now, you know, everyone knows that you went up on the stand and you basically lied.
And, you know, the other thing is, too, I mean, a lot of people were kind of making jokes, oh, deflated football, does that really matter? I mean, to me it matters because if the balls of the regulation weight or amount of inflation, is that going to affect the way he's going to throw the ball? Obviously, Tom Brady wants the ball at a certain, you know, deflation level so that he has more confidence when he throws the ball. And you know what? Like, if that little bit is helping him complete his passes, then it is a big deal. In that game, I haven't watched the game recently. It was actually funny. It was actually on NFL Network earlier today. They replayed the AFC Championship game, which I thought was, like, really, like, emphatically, like, just pretty much NFL Network saying, well, this is what everybody's talking about, so we're just going to replay the game for you. And really, they blew out. They blew out New England. It's so bad in that game. That game wouldn't have mattered. But the question is, now it's like, well, how many other games did they, A, played with deflated footballs that went beyond the legal limit, and, B, what else are they doing that we haven't caught? Because now this is the second time in the last 7 years that the Patriots have been caught doing something they're not allowed to do with Spygate and now with the deflated footballs. And it's just kind of like, what else is going to come up from under the rug in the next year or two that we're just going to look at some point and just say, you know what, like, do we, you know, how do we look at this era of Patriot teams? I guess for me, that's kind of where my head's going right now.
Well, to go on with what you're saying, them showing the game was horrible. It was really boring. They were destroying the Colts. You know, they ran the ball low over the room. I think with properly inflated footballs, they definitely would have won the game. But as Shannon Sharp has made his point time and time again, I think he's been one of the best former athletes that's in the media talking about this. He is continuously. Mm-hmm. It's not about whether you would have won that game and won the Super Bowl and did as well as you did. It's the fact that you did this and you lied about it. That's what we're talking about. And when you're looking at this report, it's tough. You don't have anything to refute it. The only thing that they have said is that this was a sting operation. And mind you, if you're, you know, I've worked for the Federal Public Defenders. If your client is caught in a sting doing something illegal, they're still guilty no matter what it is, as long as the sting was legally operated. It's one of those things where you're looking at this situation. You know, we didn't need that. And to be honest, I think it's unfair to say, well, what else have they been doing from a professional sense of the NFL? You know, they can't speculate. But you and I as fans, we're looking at this, we're like, yeah, we got to wonder, is there something else that we don't know about? Because who would have thought that, what was it now, 8 years ago when Spygate was first talked about, who would have thought that, you know, even before that came out, that this would be a thing all this time in 2015 and that we would be talking about this? And who knows that in 10 more years, you know, will we know about something else? You know, Jerry Rice talked about the Sikkim. You never know what's going to happen. So I think we can't worry about that. What I think what should be closely analyzed is what the Wells report has said, what the Patriots organization, as well as Tom Brady and his legal team, are going to say to counter it. Because if they can bring legitimate legal arguments and questioning the information provided in it as far as to the communications and the things that, you know, that show that link Tom Brady to the real questions here that need to be answered, then that's where the battle begins. That's where I see legitimate debate. But until then, it's just, you know, New England Patriots fans handcuffing themselves, in the NFL headquarters in New York, or, you know, them creating GoFundMe accounts to pay the Patriots back several billion dollar organization for the $1 million that they got, you know, fined. You know, that stuff, that's ridiculous. That's something, you know, I look at that and I'm like, that's not important. But I think if you're a football fan, it is going to be interesting to see what's the actual debate that's going to happen.
Well, the funny thing is, too, that the Patriots actually financially make out of the situation because they don't have to pay Brady for those four games. He makes over $1 million average in those four games. So they actually are going to save money by this. So, you know, for those people out there, that is the one part of the Goodell punishment that actually, it's just on paper, it's like, oh, man, $1 million, but when you actually look at the fine print, you see that Brady's not playing in the four games, they don't have to pay him, then all of a sudden you say, wow, that really was nothing. So it's not really like, you know, the biggest thing with that, which again makes the Patriot fans giving, a billionaire and Robert Kraft money is kind of stupid, but you know, I digress there. Do you think, also too, given your expertise kind of in the law background, do you see at all this suspension getting limited? I mean, now it's four games as it stands. They have a bye week in there, so he actually won't play until like week five or six. So do you see it getting reduced at all? And if so, how many games?
I'm not an expert as to how the NFL chooses suspension, so I will not profess as if I am. I will say from my experience and what I know, I remember that, you know, when you talk about suspensions, I remember the first appeal that ever succeeded was Troy Polamalu. I think it was back in 2010 after they lost the Super Bowl. Early in that season, he was fined by the league for using a cell phone while on the field after he had it was thought that he had a concussion injury, and he used one of the trainer's cell phones to call his wife and say, I'm okay. And that was deemed illegal because you're not allowed to have a cell phone on the sideline, and, you know, that was an issue. But, you know, after the season was over, Roger Goodell and the NFL said, okay, that's not something that we want to penalize. That's something that we'll let go. This is, you know, that's the standard. If I'm holding it to that standard, because I'm not familiar with all the different times that may have been that an appeal has succeeded, if I'm looking at that standard, it's tough to say that it will get that. You know, from what I've seen, again, I'm not an expert. I can't say I'm speaking on expertise in this department. But the preponderance of the evidence standard, you know, whether, you know, the more probable than not standard, I see that here. It, you know, you got a guy admitting in these text messages that he deflates footballs and that Tom Brady likes it when he deflates footballs and he likes it a certain way. And you got him joking about it with this guy. And not just one or two times, but over a period of time. And that draws the question. I think it was A.J. Thiele, the former quarterback for the Eagles and the Dolphins and maybe some other teams too. He said he thought it was that was a question back in 2004, but no one paid any attention back in that time. So, you know, I see it really hard to refute the evidence that is there that has established the more probable than not standing where we're at as far as when you ask, did the Patriots organization do this and did Tom Brady know about it? I don't think it'll get restricted, but who knows? I've been wrong about the NFL and their decision several times.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, who do you know? How do you know what the NFL is going to do? They've kind of been inconsistent in the past with their domestic abuse suspensions
exactly.
And their drug suspensions. I mean, they're kind of trying to get to some sort of consistent level, and they're consistently being inconsistent. So you're kind of on par with everybody. We don't know. I mean, every case is kind of its own individual case. You know, the other question, too, to be asked is, you know, when you look at the Steelers' schedule after that, you know, they got the 49ers with Colin Kaepernick the very next week. Then they've got, you know, the Ravens with Flacco, the Chargers with Phillip Rivers. You scroll further down the schedule, you know, they've got Russell Wilson with the Seahawks. Right after that, Andrew Luck. They got him on the docket. They've got Peyton Manning on the docket. It's murderer's row for quarterbacks. And, you know, it kind of begs the question, you know, and I think it was actually an article written about this on BCSC. Are you relieved and happy that we're not going to face Tom Brady in week one? Or would you rather just say, bring it on? We have to face tough quarterbacks anyway. Let's just face the best right now. And down the road, while that might hurt us in week one, down the road, that might benefit us from playing week one so early with Tom Brady.
I think as far as what I like, you know, I have on the side of I think that something needs to be done about this because it's ridiculous that we now have this evidence and if they just got away scot-free, you know, I think that they should be suspended. Personally, I like to be the team when they're at their best. I don't like them to have excuses, and fans will always have excuses. You know, last night the Bulls fans were still making excuses about, you know, whether the top skisson got, you know, kicked the guy and should have done whatever. People are always going to be talking about that. I think what we have to look at now, you know, we have to be prepared. We cannot lose to a non-Tom Brady Patriots team. And this Garoppolo guy, this Jimmy Garoppolo, he's very much the pretty boy. If you look it up, people said back in 2014 he had the NFL best smile or whatever, and he, you know, he had decent stats in college, and you know his preseason stats aren't that bad either. He's 46-for-79, 58.2% completion, 618 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. Not great, not horrible. In the regular season, he's 19-for-27, a 70.3% completion percentage, 182 yards, 1 touchdown, no interception. Now, granted, you know, these do not indicate whether or not he can be a starting quarterback in the NFL, long-term, short-term, whatever. But we have to be prepared. I prefer to face Tom Brady because if we win – that's going to be like, man, we just beat Tom Brady. But, you know, when we're going into this situation, I think that they can beat the Patriots with or without him. I think it'll be tougher with Brady, and, you know, Garoppolo, he's a wild card. We don't have as much experience in knowing what he's going to be trying to do with this offense. But I hope that whatever happens, the Steelers come to play on opening day and they lay the beat down in Foxborough. That's my biggest one.
I think everybody agrees with that. And, yeah, Garoppolo, you know, I did a story about it earlier this week. You know, his senior year, man, in college, he could throw the ball. I mean, again, Eastern Illinois, so not really top-tier competition, but still, he threw over 5,000 yards, 53 touchdowns, 9 picks, averaged 361 yards passing a game. And you look at his bio at NFL.com, I mean, just like Tom Brady, they really praise his ability to just with his quick release. They really like his natural leadership abilities, as you mentioned. They mentioned, too, that he is really a pure pocket passer. I mean, he's a 4.9, 40-yard dash guy, and he only carried the ball 10 times last year for 9 yards. So he's a lot like Tom Brady in that regard. He's 6'2", so, you know, about the same height as Brady, maybe a little shorter, but kind of that same kind of build, same kind of look. They love his decision-making, too, and overall toughness. So those are all kind of attributes that you've heard about Tom Brady, you know, in recent years. The couple of knocks on him, they say he's got small hands, so, you know, Cameron Haywood can get a good push on the ball or to it on the defensive line, all the better for us. I mean, to get a hand in his face will be to our benefit. They also said he's not the most accurate deep ball passer, which you would think as a backup that Belichick is going to design a game plan that's going to call on him not throwing the ball deep and just kind of controlling and possessing the clock. So that could be another thing for the Steelers. You know, maybe just press up on those, Brandon LaFell and Julian Edelman, and Gronk, and just see if he can beat him over top, which, you know, if you look at the bio, he only averaged, I think, 6 yards, a little over 6 yards of completion last year. So this is not a guy in Garoppolo that really is going to throw the ball deep down the field. So that's one thing for us. You know, I would press up, force him to throw the ball deep, and try to get a hand in his face, because that's another thing that it looks like here in
bring
the bio that
the
we
heat.
Can do. So.
Bring the heat. That's always my, you know, it's when you got a guy that's new in there, you can, if you knock him off his launch spot, if you can get in his face and make him have to make adjustments, that's where make it so that everything can't go as planned for him. And then that's when you're okay, young man, you're in here. Let's see if you can make adjustments, because we're bringing heat. We're switching up. If we can do that, then that's going to be exciting. And if he beats us that way, you know, props to him. But I want to make him have to beat me that way.
Absolutely. So we know Tom Brady will play next year. We just don't know when, and it won't be against the Steelers for sure. But another thing we know for sure is that Ed Reed is hanging it up. The 12-year safety,
yep.
He didn't play last season. I think he was just keeping his options open to see if anybody was going to show any interest, and nobody did. So Ed Reed, I think the age of 36 years of age, is going to retire from the National Football League. Came along with Troy Polamalu. Ed was a free safety. Troy was a strong safety. The debate's always out there, you know, who's the best safety this year between those two. I think it's pretty disputable that of this era, Ed is the best free safety, Troy's the best strong safety, and we can debate all day long who's the better one. For me, it's Troy, because their attributes are pretty much the same. Troy went to 8 Pro Bowls, was an All-Pro, I think, 4 times. Ed Reed was a 9-time Pro Bowler, 5-time All-Pro guy. The difference to me is that Troy made bigger plays in bigger games. I mean, Troy, that whole 05 playoff run, the interception against the Bengals, all the great plays all over the field against the Colts, that unbelievable tackle against the Broncos in the AFC Championship game where he's falling backwards and breaks up a screenplay. The pick six against the Ravens. I mean, it could go on and on and on. But Ed retires with a lot of interceptions. You can't dispute that. 64 picks in his career. Mm-hmm. NFL Defensive Player of the Year in 2004. The list goes on and on and on, his accomplishments. What do you think about Ed Reed? I know he played for the hated Ravens, but I don't know if you agree, Chris. He was always one of my favorite players. Again, despite the fact he played for the Ravens, he seemed like a class guy, and you obviously couldn't dispute how talented he was.
Well, again, always when you played the Ravens, you knew you had to prepare to have Ed, to fight Ed Reed, because he was going to be, you know, he was going to be a ball hawk. He was going to be sitting back there playing center field, flying to the ball if you threw it near him. I respect him as a great player that he was in his career. And, you know, I got to say, I'll say this, the better you are, the more fun I had watching the Steelers beat you. And when I saw the Steelers beat them time and time again in the playoffs, it was awesome. I remember in 2008, when Hines Ward caught a pass early in the game and he ran right past Ed Reed, and I was like, man, look at him go. You know, I have to agree with you. Ed did make an interception in the Super Bowl. You know, Ed did make,
yeah,
you know, some big plays here and there. But the iconic plays that Troy Polamalu had, I mean, that interception return for a touchdown is one of the, if you had to pick a staple play in the history of the rivalry of the Steelers and the Ravens, that may just be it. If it's not Brian Clark knocking out Willis McGahee a few minutes later, is,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
that's got to be one of them. And Troy Polamalu, and this is what I say when I say you can't just look at stats, because you know what? You know, Darren Sharper has as many interceptions as Ronnie Lott, but I would not say that Darren Sharper is as good as Ronnie Lott. I look at what was your role in this defense? Troy Polamalu didn't just sit back and wait for passes. Half the time he was blitzing or looking for the run or up guarding something specific or just flying around or even LeBeau said sometimes we just let him do what he wants to do. And that led to him jumping over the pile. I never saw Ed Reed time a snack perfectly, jumping over the line, not being offside,
that's
and snagging
point.
The quarterback yeah. before he even starts. I never saw Ed Reed make that amazing one-handed fingertip interception against the San Diego Chargers. You know, those are things that you just didn't see Ed Reed. Or split the blockers, like you said, in the AFC Championship game against the Denver Broncos in 2005. Those are things that Troy was so unique at doing, and then he brought to the Steelers, brought to the table for the Steelers. And you saw how important he was. In 2008, they were Super Bowl champions. In 2010, they were AFC champions. And I think him getting hurt against the Bengals late in the season hindered him in the playoff run, and and I think that did play a role in how well he played in the Super Bowl when we lost to the Packers. But in between those seasons, when he was Defensive Player of the Year in 2010, a Super Bowl champion in 2008, 2009, the only time we missed the playoffs in that span, he was hurt. He got hurt in week one, and you know that may be leading to our next topic. The Madden curse, quote-unquote, hit him with the 2010 cover, and you know you saw how bad the defense became in his absence. And it was just, whoa, like, it's that important. This is that, you know, he is that essential to the success of the Steelers' defense. And especially in the prime of his career, you can't argue that. And you know, at the end of the day, they're both great safeties. If you had to pick two safeties from the AFC North in its history of existence since they switched it from the Central to the North, the only two safeties that you could pick are Polamalu and Ed Reed. I do think that they should go in at the same time. They're, you know, one's great. You know, in that era, you talk about a great rivalry, and those two helped make it that. I think that. The only reason I'd say Polamalu would have that extra step is because he got the two Super Bowl rings and he was essential in both of them, the AFC Championship, and just, again, the uniqueness of the things that he brought to the table. And he was able to be a ball hawk. There's several plays where you can look at, like, against the Atlanta Falcons in week one of 2010, of the AFC Championship run in 2010. Matt Ryan, the offense was struggling because they had Dennis Dixon at quarterback, but Matt Ryan throws a pass that Troy Paul had no business catching, but he found some way to fly there and get it. So he could do the Paul hockey, but he also could do the tackling, the splitting up the blockers, chase anyone down, jump over the pile. He did it all. So that's where I stand on the debate.
Yeah. You know, and again, at the end of the day, I mean, it's almost like apples and oranges because they were so great. And you hit on another
right.
great point. They did different things, and their abilities demanded they did different things, and also the systems they played in demanded different things. And, you know, Troy Polamalu was never going to be a guy that was just going to sit back there in secondary. He was always going to be a guy that, like you said, he would freelance, he would blitz, he would cover the run. He would do anything that he felt needed to be done, and which also sometimes was perfectly timing Kerry Coughlin's snap, which he did that a couple times, and you can't believe it. And another amazing play in that rivalry was the 2010 strip sack of Joe Flacco.
Yeah.
I think Lamar Woodley picked up. So, I mean, again, just constant. I mean, that's the thing. He made so many great plays.
Made
that
so many
was
of
an
them.
Amazing play that we didn't get to earlier. It's just that was the kind of impact that Troy Polamalu had. And you know,
exactly.
The other thing, too, and I hope in 2021 when they're both eligible, and you wonder, I don't know, I mean, probably not, but you can't help but think if Ed Reed didn't have that in his mind, that, you know what, Troy hung it up, I'll hang it up now, too. And maybe if we're both first ballot Hall of Famers in 6 years, 5 years, we'll both get into the Hall of Fame together. And how cool would that be? In my opinion, I think that would just be the quintessential. You know, you get two of the best safeties, not only of their era, but of all time, on rival teams that helped both of their teams win Super Bowls, countless matchups against each other, countless Pro Bowls lining up with each other. And then at the end of the day, to go in together, that would be pretty special.
I think it would be very special. I think it would be very awesome, especially for a fan like myself and like yourself. These are players that we saw, you know, when we're looking at when people that are getting, that have been inducted, you know, Jerome Bettis, I saw him when he got to the Steelers. You know, I was a little kid, but I was in middle school when we got Troy Polamalu, and, you know, seeing that, I'm like, I saw his career from beginning to end as a real big Steelers fan, and I saw Ed Reed progress in the league. You know, that would be exciting to me to see both of them enter in. I think it would be well-deserved. You can't leave either of them off, you know, the greatest safeties of all time discussion. So I think that would definitely be very something very amazing to see in 5 years.
The last thing about these two guys too. The other thing is, again, it's just how weird their careers, how similar they were. Eerie, like, you know, Ed Reed pretty much helped revive the Miami Hurricanes program in the late 90s, early 2000s, culminating in them winning a national title. Troy Polamalu and Carson Palmer. Very similar situation with USC. I mean, they were kind of on the outs, and then Polamalu and Carson and some other guys came in there, and by the time they were done, they won the Orange Bowl that season. They finished in the top three, or maybe they even finished number two in the nation that year. And then the very next year, USC won the national title, and Troy was a rookie year. So both guys kind of helped their college program get back into the national picture. And then, you know, Ed Reed, almost right off the bat, was a great player, just like Troy. Troy had 1 year in 03 where he was kind of adapting to everything. But right after that, I mean, they were all pros four times next to each other at the Pro Bowl, and all their Pro Bowl years kind of lined up together. They won their Super Bowls around the same time, and they obviously retired the same season. And it's one of those things, too, where, you know, they both retired, and I think everybody will admit that they may not quite be the same players they used to be, but I really do believe if both of them decided to come back now, the ages they are, and if they were healthy, they could still contribute to an NFL defense. That's how good these guys were. You get the last say on this one.
Oh, my bad. Okay. I agree. I do think that Troy, you saw him slowing down, but you know what? That man knows so much about defense. He is so well known. You know, I still am not ruling out in the back of my mind that he may pull a James Harrison and a Brett Keisel, because those two had both done the exact same thing. You may just see him come back this week four, week five, if Will Allen gets hurt and if Shamarco gets hurt, because he always gets hurt, and if we got, you know, if Mike Mitchell's groin is messing with him again, and we need a knowledgeable safety to play back there, who knows? Maybe 43 will strap it back up again. But I know this much, and Ed Reed, he tried to stick with teams. He just didn't fit in. I think that's part of what Troy was able to bring in. Troy was a lot faster than Ed. So I think his downgrade itself, he has a little bit more athleticism left in the tank than maybe Ed Reed had. He's also a year younger. I would love to see it, but I do think that if I am looking for an emergency safety and I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm calling Troy Polamalu, and I'm like, listen, hey, man, you got something left for you, because I'd like to see you, and the fans would love to see you at Heinz Field again.
Yeah, you know what? It might actually work out more, because he won't be out there in training camp banging the weight. His body might be fresh because he's not doing a lot to beat it up. You know, sometimes when you get older,
right. It's
doing less and not doing more, or – and I heard Flynn Mayweather say it a lot, you know, it's working smarter, not harder.
Exactly.
Speaking of working hard, the Steelers rookies are made their debut in the black and gold this past week, the Steelers rookie camp. And I was on Steelers.com a lot, much more than I normally am during an off season, but I've been really interested in this team and what they're doing. And I like the draft pick. Real quick before we get into this topic, too, I did want to remind all of our viewers out there, feel free to call on the show at any time. You're here with Chris Carter and Brian Yard on What's Hot, 340-850-8581. Anytime during the show for calls, concerns, and questions concerning the Steelers or any other NFL-related topics. Again, it's 347-850-8581. And, yeah, when you're looking at the Steelers rookies, this is their first week at camp. I heard a lot of cool things being said by, I know, Jesse James. He actually – Steelers.com reporters, Chris, they ask the tough questions. I know reading his draft bio, Jesse James had some questions about catching the football and his ability to block. And he was right there talking about it. They asked, they said, hey, you know, how well can you block? And you know, I hope you're going to get a lot of great quotes out of Jesse James when I was watching the Steelers.com video. He's pretty much interviews to the book. As you can tell, he's been through Penn State school, not saying much, and just kind of giving the blasé answers. So, but again, that kid's there to play football, and I like what I've seen out of him. They're showing a lot of Bud Dupree, and they're saying that he's a highly motivated guy and that he's already shown up the rookie camp and he's kind of already taken the leadership presence with the rest of the rookies. So that's something good that you want to hear. And we also signed 12 free agents. One of them was Kansas State center B.J. Finney, who grew up a Steelers fan, and the Steelers.com, by virtue of the Wichita Eagle newspaper, they were able to capture the video of Finney telling his friends and family when he was drafted by the Steelers, and he said, quote, dreams do come true, and I'm living proof. So that's a pretty cool story, and they might find a spot for him. They said that he's done a good job so far this past week. But last week, our editor at BTSC, Jeff, asked us to make some rookie predictions. Chris, I'd like to start with you, but your rookie predictions for the class of 2015 for the Steelers.
My rookie predictions. Well, these are always a shot in the dark. But I do think that Bud Dupree will get at least 4 sacks this season. I see him being put in good situations, and he's going to be able to make some plays. And, you know, they might not come in the biggest of games. They might not be like James Harrison when he was wrecking Joe Flacco earlier this early in 2014. But I think that he's going to get some sacks, and we're going to see his athleticism come into play because he's faster than what Jarvis Jones brought to the table as a rookie. And, you know, Jarvis, he's developing. They're saying Joey Porter State, he's getting better, and they're liking what they see. But I really think you're going to see him. As far as Senquist, Golston, and Dorn Grant, oh, man. I hope that Golston can be that player, maybe like Bryce McCain, because if he can just come in, make some key interceptions, create the turnovers, that's what we need. We don't need you to be a superstar right away. I mean, it's nice if you are, but if you come to the table and you're making plays, that's what I'm asking. So as far as St. Clair's Golden, I say he gets 2 interceptions on his season with a few passes defense, but one's going to be a pick 6 because he loves to carry the ball. And he loves to move with it. And I'd say if we're talking Jesse James, I think he's going to do okay. I don't think he'll outperform Matt Spaeth and Heath Miller to get up in the depth chart. But I do think he'll get some looks, and he might get a touchdown in the red zone or something like Derek Moy got, you know, 2 seasons ago in 2013 when he got his look, another Penn State guy. But I think the biggest surprise, and maybe not the surprise, but the biggest a big contributor will be Sammy Coates. You know, we already have 3 receivers, young guys that we're looking at, Antonio Brown, Marcus Wheaton, and Martavis Bryant, but I really think Sammy Coates can add a big play element to an offense that has a lot of big play guys on it. And I think that's going to be a big story that a lot of people aren't thinking of right now. They're like, man, why did we spend our 3rd-round draft pick on a position that we are overstocked at already? I think he's going to really come in big. I know you're hyping Anthony Ciccolo from Miami. He looks decent. I'm not sold on it. I'm one of those guys that, you know, people can tell me, make me excited about players for years. Oh, this guy looks great in camp. He's the Isaac Redman of this year. And I'm like, yeah, but Isaac Redman lasted here for a few seasons, made some nice plays, but I got to see it translate against a professional and see those development factors. But I'd say I'd say that, you know, Dupree's going to get 4 more sacks. I do think he will produce this year. Golston will get a few picks for us. And I think he will challenge Cortez Allen. At the end of this next season, there'll be a question. All right, you know, with William Gay, do we need to bring him back, or who do we want on the number one guy? Because I do think that they will like him a lot, and that Carnell Lake will be able to work with him. Sammy Coates, I do think he'll produce for the offense.
Yeah, I like a lot of what you said. I am a big Ciccolo guy. I don't know if for whatever reason, you know, when I heard this guy talking about him, I mean, on draft day, and Bill Polian was on ESPN. The Hall of Fame general manager, and he was just raving about how he couldn't believe Ciccolo fell this far. And, yeah, again, his college stats weren't great, but, you know, for what everybody says about him and for how well he played in the All-Star game he participated in, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he could be a steal, and maybe he just was out of position in Miami or for whatever reason it just didn't really work out there. But he's got all the intangibles. And the thing is, you know, I look at a guy like that, he could be a great special team stud. He could be a guy that just comes in and just – rushes the quarterback. You know, I don't know. I see a lot of just small things he can do for our team. And he's not going to be a starter. There's no way. There's no way he'll be a starter. But maybe Jerry Osowski from the 90s or kind of a guy like that, or Earl Holmes before he was a starter, just a solid player, just make some nice flash plays for us. I think that's kind of the thing I'm looking at with Ciccolo. And I totally agree with Coates. I mean, I read another article in Yahoo Sports the other day about how a lot of people think he could be the steal of the draft in the Steelers. Just you know, he's a big play guy. He had over 200 yards against Alabama last year. And got engaged right after he got drafted. So it was a pretty big weekend for that guy. And, you know, I think there's been a lot of big things at him. And in general, I really love our linebacking core with Timmons, with Shazier from last year. There was an article Joey Porter said last week about how he thinks that Jarvis Jones is going to have a bounce-back season. This is going to be the best season he's had so far. So, you know, there's obviously the optimism there. I think just as a whole, you know, Arthur Motes, I'm a big fan of him. There's I read a comment in one of my articles. Somebody said, oh, BTSC must really be, a hater on Arthur Motes. I'm not a hater on him. He's just one of those solid guys. He can kind of get overlooked, and there's not really a lot to write about. He's just a solid guy that does the job. You know, he's kind of like Larry Foote. You know, there wasn't not a lot of great plays that pop out about Larry Foote. I remember his interception in the AFC title game in 05. But, you know, beyond that, he was just a solid guy that did his job, kind of like Arthur Motes. And I think that's kind of the same thing, you know, that we're going to get out of our secondary. You know, when you look at Gerard Grant, he wasn't a great – he didn't make a lot of splash plays for OSU. He was just such a solid tackler, such a solid man in coverage. And he did have 5 picks his senior year, so it wasn't like he didn't make a lot of great plays. He had a big interception early against Wisconsin that kind of helped OSU in that 59-0 route of them in the Big Ten title game. But I think he's going to take over where Will Allen left off. So he'll just be one of those solid guys. I think he's going to play a lot on special teams, and we're in our third and long nickel defense packages. So, I just think overall this is a very impactful player draft. Again, I think the wild card a lot of people aren't sure of is Gerard Holloman, because we know he can intercept the ball. He had 14 of them. Again, there was an article in the Post Gazette this week where he came out pretty confident that he's going to make the Steelers. Yep. He said, I know I'm a great player. He thinks people were just kind of over-nicking and over-analyzing him in the draft a little bit, which is why he fell so much. But, you know, he's one of those guys that if he does go into that tackle and that maybe just was overanalyzed, him and Coates could be the Steelers of the draft for us.
He could be, who knows? He could be the Steelers of the draft. We were talking about last week. I like the things that I saw on his tape. He was able to make plays on the ball. He seemed to be in the right place at the right time. He could be a system guy, and if he can make interceptions, hey, I'll take him. And I mean, at free safety, if he's able to play back and make plays on the ball and take away the deep shots from teams, and even, you know, come up, that's what you want to see. But you never know. It's a seventh-round draft pick. We have a few successful ones like Brett Keegel or Kelvin Beachum. And Vince Williams was even hyping up Mr. Holloman with his Twitter. You know, he said, hey, man, don't worry about it. You know, just do your best, and people will see it. And I think that, you know, there's definitely potential with this guy. You just got to see where it is. He's not a speedster. He ran, a 4.6. But then again, like I said, Ed Reed wasn't a speedster. He ran a 4.57, I believe. And, you know, you're looking at this. As long as he can make the play, I think that'll be great. The only problem that people keep saying about him is that he's not much of a tackler, which will come into play. If you can't tackle on special teams, it's hard to get your experience on there and keep yourself around when the Steelers have to have 53 guys on the roster. And absolutely. So pointing back to what you were talking about with Joey Porter and the linebackers, you know, I wrote an article earlier this week about how the Steelers are on a stage of too big to fail part two. Neil talked about it 2 years ago with the linemen, and this year I think that the story might be too big to fail with our investment in the linebacking core. We currently have 4 first-round draft picks of linebackers sitting on our roster, and they can all start. They're not all banked in the one part. You got 2 outside linebackers now with Dupree and Jones. You got Shazier inside, and don't forget that Timmons was the first round draft pick of the first draft with Mike Tomlin at head coach. So you got 4 guys, and who knows, they might not be the starters. You know, Harrison might be the starter, Motes might be the starter. You know, Vince Williams, he was rocking, and who knows, Sean Spence is still out there, but there's so much invested in this position. They have to make it work. These guys are going to have to succeed for this defense to return to being elite if we want to see that. And it may not happen right away. You know, the offensive line did not gel in 2013, you know, after the year with Pouncey and DeCastro, and when DeCastro injured Pouncey. You know, it's not going to happen right away. But you got to start seeing the progress from the other players, because the past 3 drafts have been linebacker, linebacker, and linebacker in Dupree, Shazier, and Jones in the first round. So it's obvious the Steelers know where we want to emphasize, right? We see where they want to go with it. But we have to start seeing this replicate itself into the system. And we see Timmons. He's a leader. And I think, you know, as far as if we're talking about the top 100 players in the NFL, I think they're in the 80s tonight.
And I think that he's going to fall in that 10-player range. They did say a Steeler will be on there. I do think Lawrence Timmons, he's one of the better linebackers in the league, but we need someone else to join him, a few other people to join him. So when I'm looking at youngsters on this team and the linebacking core, Jerry Osofsky's working with the middle linebackers, Joey Porter's working out with the outside linebackers, I want to see these young players step up so that Harrison doesn't always have to be the guy that saves our butts when we need it.
Could agree more. And, yeah, stay tuned for more rookie news as those guys continue to get more ingrained into the Steeler tradition. So we'll keep you up to date on all the Steeler rookies moving ahead in the NFL draft here on What's Hot with Chris Carter and Brian Diardo. We got about 15 minutes left in the show. Something we want to talk about last week that we didn't have time for is a lot of anniversaries coming up this year in 2015. Last year, the 40th anniversary of the Super Bowl IX Steeler team. Well, this year we have the 40th anniversary of the second team that won the Super Bowl, the very next year, the 75 Steelers. And, Chris, we're kind of analyzing and talking about what we're going to do on the show, a couple nights ago. We actually both agreed the 78 Steelers is the best Steelers team of all time, but I could make the argument that the 75 Steelers are right up there with the 78 team. This was a couple years before. 78 was actually the first season that the NFL stretched the schedule, regular season schedule, from 14 to 16 games. So 75 Steelers played 14 games. They went 12-2. They blew out the Chargers for their first win, 37-0. And Liz Swan said after the game the Steelers were really overconfident. Well, guess what? The Bills came into town the very next week. O.J. Simpson had over 200 rushing yards, and they beat the Steelers 30-21. Well, needless to say, that was wake-up call for the Steelers. They beat the Browns the next week 42-6 and won 11 straight games. They sat all their starters in the last game of the year at Los Angeles. They lost that game 10-3. But in between those two losses, they won 11 straight games. They finished the year 12-2, and they carried all that momentum into the postseason. They beat Burt Jones and a very good Colts team, 28-10. And one of the funnier plays in that game is Andy Russell had about a 70-some yard intercept return for a touchdown that Sports Illustrated called the slowest
touchdown
run
ever, yeah.
For a touchdown in NFL history. They won that game 28-10. They beat Oakland in one of the craziest games of all time. There was the Ice Bowl between Dallas and Green Bay in the 60s. This was like the Sleep Bowl, I guess. And there's also the controversy, if you want to talk about Patriot cheating, there's been controversy now for 40 years that the Steelers opened up the tarp the night before and let the rain come in on the Three River Stadium field, which created ice outside the hash marks. So the Cliff Branch, the Raiders all-pro receiver, couldn't run past Mel Blount. That was one guy Mel Blount always had issues with, was Cliff Branch. One of those guys, I don't know how, he's not in the Hall of Fame. But needless to say, the Raiders passing game was very insufficient. There was a million turnovers in this game, one of the uglier games you'll ever see. Somehow the Steelers managed to eke out 16 points. They won the game 16-10. John Starks had a touchdown catch in that game. He also had a great block.
Crushed
him. Game-clinching score. Yeah, yeah. You know the play I'm talking about.
He knocked two of them out. I think Tatum was one of them.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right there. So, and obviously we know about the Super Bowl. They beat Dallas 21-17. And again, you know, there's so many Super Bowls, you know, memorable Super Bowl moments. We really haven't blown out a team in the Super Bowl, you know, which is kind of interesting, but as great as we have been. But that was the Super Bowl where Jack Lambert threw down Harris, the free safety of the Dallas Cowboys, after he was messing with Roy Jarrell after Roy missed his third field goal, he threw down Cliff Harris. And from that point on, it was game on. They were down 10-7 at that time. They ended up scoring 14 unanswered points. They had, all 14 in the fourth quarter. So they were able to win in 21-17. Lynn Swan was the MVP. And everybody remembers all those great catches he made in that game. And the Steelers' dynasty was kind of on at that point. You heard me blabber about it. Chris, what are some of your memorable moments from that 75 Steelers team?
Well, if you're talking about the 75 Steelers, you got to talk about how they went up against the Raiders in a classic game where there were tons of turnovers. You got to talk about how these young players in Stallworth and Swan, this is their second year in the league. Their first year they were Super Bowl champions. And they rose to the occasion throughout the year. Lynn Swan, a guy that, he didn't get a lot of opportunity. He didn't get any opportunities in Super Bowl IX to catch the ball, but he took every opportunity. And then after getting knocked out, in the, you know, he got collared in the head, on the head, by Tatum. I think it was Tatum or Atkins. I think it was Atkinson who knocked him out of the game in the Raiders, you know, the week before the Super Bowl. But he got back up and he made some of the greatest catches in Super Bowl history and NFL history. Everyone remembers the levitating leap where he caught the ball and juggled it at the 50-yard line, I think it was. And then there's also the first catch of the game when he skied up between two defenders and somehow got his feet inbound. Still don't know how he actually did that. And then, you know, the big touchdown that was the go-ahead score when Terry Bradshaw threw it and then got destroyed. But it was a perfect ball, and he beat his, and Swan beat his man yet again, and he was Super Bowl X MVP. You know, there's so many iconic moments. But I think you got to look at Super Bowl X, just the how the defense adjusted to Roger Staubach, a great quarterback who I don't think gets enough credit as one of the great 12, you know, in football history. And you're talking about the great 12, the first people that come to my mind are Bradshaw, Staubach, and Brady. And you're looking at these three, and Staubach needs to be right up there. If it wasn't for the Steelers, he would have had two more Super Bowl rings. And you listen to Mike Wagner. He talked about, hey, you know, we got fooled by their defense, by their offense one, but then he came back and he made an interception. And then at the end of the game, when Terry Hanratty was in the game and the Steelers had the ball at midfield, they decided we're not going to put the game to chance with our special team. We're just going to run the ball, give them the ball back, and we're going to let our defense win the game. And sure enough, Glenn Edwards makes the interception in the end zone. And the Staubach, he almost did it again. He was the comeback captain. He almost let him down the field. But the fact that the Steelers, the steel curtain defense, that was the prime, that was like right around the prime of their greatness, was when they were able to make that stop. And you saw how good they were with forcing as many turnovers as they did against the Raiders the week before, and then making the big plays against Roger Staubach and the Cowboys. So 75, definitely a great anniversary to celebrate. You know, we got other anniversaries to celebrate, but we'll talk about that on a future show. It is one of those things to watch. If you haven't watched it, go find the America's Game version of it. You'll listen to Dwight White talk about it. You listen to Lynn Swan talk about it, and I forget who the third one that they interviewed. It was Mike Wagner because he had those interceptions. But also, if you haven't checked it out, if you Google Deadspin and Super Bowl X documentary, there was a great guerrilla documentary. Very much.
I've seen it. Yeah, I watched it. Yeah.
Yes, it is awesome. And if you're listening to us right now, go look it up. It's a great documentary. It goes over piece by piece. It talks to players in the locker room. It's amazing. You get to see these guys live, and it's just like, wow. So that, but yes, that's what I would say.
It's timeless. It's nuts. Yeah, I know that's what you're talking about. Because I think somebody, maybe it was you, posted that on BTSB before the Super Bowl last year, and it was just awesome. You know, for me, and I agree, you look at the 75 Steelers, couple other things that stand out to mind is the AFC Central that year was really competitive. Cincinnati was 11-3, Houston was 10-4. Against the rest of the NFL, the Bengals and Oilers were combined 21-3. Against the Steelers that year, they were 0-4. So the Steelers they handled their business when they faced these other great opponents. You know, Houston they swept the Bengals that year. The Steelers team in 75 was great just because it was like, you know, they were able to, they knew that the Super Bowl IX kind of validated their greatness, and then in 75 it was kind of like, all right, let's just see how great we can be. And they did a lot of great things. We actually do have a caller. It's actually Jeff. And, Jeff, the floor is yours, sir. What do you have on your mind?
Yeah, is this me?
Yep, you're on, Jeff.
You guys are doing a good job. Hey, I had a question about the 75 Steelers for you. Obviously, I'm a contributor to the Behind the Steel Curtain website. I wanted to know, I did a little March Madness bracket for the website, and I had Jack Lambert throwing down that Dallas Cowboy player as one of the top plays in Steelers history. And a lot of Steelers fans were saying that they felt that wasn't necessarily a play. Now, I found it to be very significant in terms of the Steelers' history, especially that playoff run, in terms of momentum, in terms of the, I guess, defining moment for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I wanted to get your guys' take on whether you thought that was considered a play. Should it have been in the bracket? And if so, or if not, why?
I think it should have been in the bracket just because of what you said. I mean, where they were at that point in the game and where they were as a team, you know, it's almost like at that point they had won Super Bowl IX, and, they were a great team, but they really hadn't been validated. And at that point, Dallas had only had won Super Bowl II, but they had played in a plethora of NFL title games in the 60s, and they had already played in a couple other Super Bowls. That was their third Super Bowl, Super Bowl X. And to Dallas, the Steelers were still kind of new kids on the block, and I think Dallas still thought they could kind of pump the Steelers out, and maybe they could still kind of own the mental game with the Steelers. And, you know, there was also kind of this spoof back then, too, just kind of like there was in the 90s where the NFC was better than the AFC. That kind of existed back then, too. So I think Dallas was still trying to treat the Steelers like their kid brothers. Hollywood Henderson was dancing after the opening kickoff, and Roy Girella, that's actually the play where he hurt his ribs, was trying to tackle Hollywood on that kick. So, you know, Roy just missed his third field goal. It was 10-7. The Steelers just didn't really have the momentum in the game. And then you cap it all off with Cliff Harris, who talked trash about Lynn Swann leading up to that game, threatening that Swann shouldn't play. Now he's messing with our kicker. So, honestly, we were getting pumped at that point. And somebody had to do something. And, Jack Lambert happened to be that guy. He said, you know what? Enough's enough. You know, we listened to you talk all week. We watched Hollywood dance around. You know, we watched Drew Pearson dance after they scored a touchdown on him in the first quarter. Enough's enough. And I totally agree, Jeff. And that's why that play is monumental. And that's why, while it's not technically a football play, it has to be recognized as one of the greatest plays in Steeler history, because that changed the mental culture of the Steelers, where it's like, enough's enough. No one's intimidating us. We're the intimidators. And I think that's why that play is so important.
You know what? And we're the intimidators. There are certain things that I can remember when I first got on this earth. You know, I remember waking up in the middle of the night, you know, as a kid in my parents' apartment. And one of the first things I remember seeing is a grainy old videotape of my dad replaying a Super Bowl X highlight. And John Facenda saying, we're the intimidators, talking about when Jack Lambert slammed Cliff Harris. And you saw how none of the Cowboys came to his defense. I think that it needs to be considered, because that set the tone. And the Cowboys, they just scored. They were looking like they're flashy selves. They were talking trash. And I was like, oh, well, these guys, they don't seem to like that. And that sort of changed the momentum of the game. Has to be considered. I think in that poll, because I was one of the people that didn't vote against it or didn't vote for it when it came up against some of the bigger plays. You know, if we're talking about comparing that to, you know, Stanton at home touchdown catch, I got to go with touchdown catch. But it's still a momentous time. For the Steelers, then it changed the momentum and the attitude of that game, and it was part of the identity that became the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was Jack Lambert's second year in the league. You didn't see Jarvis Jones doing that his second year in the league. You don't see anybody doing that in their second year in the league. Second year of the league, James Harrison was struggling beyond. That speaks to how amazing that play is. So Jeff, I do think it needs to be considered. Technically, it's not a play, but it is one of the biggest things that has ever been done. Outside of the whistle, as far as the Steelers are concerned.
And thanks again, Jeff, for calling in.
No problem.
So yeah, that's Jeff, our editor here behind the steel curtain, and also thanks to him as well for allowing us to do this show. I pitched it to him a while back, and he hooked Chris and I up, so we've been enjoying it. Thanks again, Jeff, and we hope that everybody out there is enjoying the show as well. One last thing to kind of mention about Super Bowl X, that was kind of the validation of Terry Bradshaw as a great quarterback. You know, he earned one of his first Pro Bowl berth that season. And, you know, the Super Bowl, the regular season actually was Franco's best regular season. He ran for 1,246 yards. He scored, I think, 11 touchdowns. You know, he was really the catalyst of our offense. But in the Super Bowl, he only had 82 yards and 27 carries. Dallas did a great job stopping him. Terry had to step up, and before he was concussed by Robin Cool and D.D. Lewis late in that game, you know, he threw the game-winning touchdown pass to Swann, and he really stood in the pocket and did a great job in that game. Really actually fooled Dallas' defense on the first touchdown to Randy Grossman on a play where they always rolled left. Bradshaw rolled right. Dallas went left.
Right.
Grossman was wide open. That play was really the validation of how great the Steelers' defense was, sacking Staubach 7 times. At that point, Super Bowl record, picking him off 3 more times. Bradshaw the way he was, and then Swann with those you know, immortal catches. I mean, there were so many great moments. That 75 Steeler team, in my mind, stands up with any of them. Not saying they're better than the 78 teams, but they can hold their own against them. Last topic, Chris, we're going to talk about the Madden cover jinx. Odell Beckham Jr. is the new Madden cover king. He'll be on Madden 16. So it begs the question, are you happy that Antonio Brown wasn't on the cover? if you believe in the jinx, or were you disappointed because you don't care about the jinx and you would have liked to have seen another Steeler on the cover?
Well, you know, the objective, Christopher Carter, that does not believe in superstition, says that, you know what, it was very unfortunate that Antonio Brown didn't get this opportunity. He could have been the face of EA Sports for a year. He could have gotten several more commercials and endorsements, and it could have led to him, because you know he's going to have a big season in 2015. There's a lot of things that we're so sad for him. But the deep-down Steelers fanatic that I am, I have to say, I am ecstatic that he did not get this. Like I said, in 2008 and 2010, for Troy Polamalu, he was amazing. He was astounding. We were unstoppable as a team. 2009, he got hurt in the first week of the season. And we went away. And I'm like, it's all because the Madden 2010, he was on the cover, man. I'm telling you, the curse is real. Well, no, it's really, as you can say, it can be. It doesn't impact everyone, but it does seem to be some weird backstory that you got to account for. That people, you know, Sean Alexander, Eddie George, Marshall Faulk, Dante Culpepper, Michael Vick getting injured in the first game of the preseason that year that he was on the cover. It's insane how many times. You know, it's part of just, it's, you know, it's superstition. It's not real. But you know what? As many superstitious dark clouds that I think that have hung over this team with how their offensive line couldn't be healthy for more than 2 weeks in a season, I'm starting to, you know, have my Joe Boo from Major League, and I'm not stealing his rum. I'm gonna just do the best that I can without these curses. So I was hoping that Rob Gronkowski could get that curse to add to the Patriots' bad luck, so we don't have to deal with them as much. But you know, Odell Beckham, you know, maybe he can be another player that breaks the curse, because there are players who have outplayed the curse. Calvin Johnson didn't get hit with the curse. I think he had a big year. But you know, Richard Sherman, he was playing hurt all season, and then you saw, because they, you know, it was sort of Richard Sherman was on the cover, and if you play the game, his teammates were featured, and the secondary was featured throughout the, you know, the game specifically, and they all got hurt. Earl Thomas got hurt. You know, they all suffered some form of injury before the Super Bowl, and you know, you can't say it definitively played a role, but those are definitely a factors that you have to consider as to how they played in the Super Bowl. And you know, you didn't see Richard Sherman be his dominant self that we're used to seeing. So personally, kind of, there's that part of me that just has a little bit of, we're safe. We don't have to worry about that this year. But what do you think? What do you think, Brian?
I'm glad he's on the cover. I'm not a superstitious guy at all, but I really do believe in the cover, in the jinx. I've seen it way too many times. I mean, you know, Richard Sherman, you know, they were just saying on ESPN during our talk, our podcast, you know, that the jinx is over, because they talk about Adrian Peterson had a good year in 2013. He was on the 14 cover. Richard Sherman was on the cover last year. Well, Sherman Seahawks lost the Super Bowl, so I would consider that a jinx. No current injuries or anything. And then obviously Adrian Peterson happened, the things happened to him, obviously, that off the field. So I would still say that both guys have been affected by the jinx. So personally, I'm glad Antonio Brown.
I forgot about
Adrian Peterson.
You're right.
Right, and then you can go back to, you know, Michael Vick was hurt the year he was on the cover. Eddie George was hurt the year he was on the cover. Ray Lewis, you can go on. Sean Alexander was on the cover, and then
Sean Alexander was on the cover
after that.
Yeah, I mean, he got hurt mid-season. Yep, and Vince Young was the cover. Vince Young was hot his rookie season, and then 2008 he was done. McNabb was another example. He got hurt that big year. That was the year that they kept flipping between, you know, whether they wanted him or Jeff Garcia or whoever else that they brought in at quarterback. But you know, I think the person that started it all, not started it because it was a thing, but the person that validated it was when Michael Vick got hurt in 2004, because he was like electrifying, and everyone wanted to use Michael Vick because he was 99 speed and you could fly around the field with him and then chuck it up, you know, 50 yards because he had a cannon on him. But when he went down, it was in the first preseason game of the season, which means it had to come within, like, one of the first drives of a preseason game that he got a season-ending injury. I think that's when everyone was like, this is a real thing. Because Dante Culpepper went down. You're like, wow, that's, you know, that was this. But ever since they started putting players on it in 2000, I think it was, you know, it's the history. There's several occasions. But, you know, let's also be realistic with this. Everybody gets hurt at some point in their career, whether or not they stay out for a game. They're going to suffer an injury playing football, you know, whether or not it's career ending, and that's where the curse comes into play. But you know, if we're being realistic, there is no such thing as Madden curse. But
If I'm a fan, I definitely am. You know, like I said, Jesus is my Lord and Savior. But you know, hey, let's keep this thing away from me. I don't need that to bother me. Is what I'm saying. I don't want it around. You know, Joe Boo, don't steal his rum. I think that's a good thing to live by.
I think there's one thing we can all agree with. We'd rather have AB on the cover of a Super Bowl champion DVD or Blu-ray at the end of the season than the cover of Madden. How about that?
I think that's the perfect thing to say. I think that you hit it right on the nose.
So, and with that, we'll end the second installment of What's Hot. We hope you enjoyed the show. I know I enjoyed being a part of it. And once again, Chris, I know you had a hectic day out there in the office in Pittsburgh, so thanks for being a soldier and doing the show with me, and I look forward to doing many more with you, including next week. And once again, too, if you weren't able to listen but you still want to, you're probably listening to this tomorrow. Go on iTunes, click on podcast, and write down The Standard is the Standard. Then you'll see the show What's Hot. And once again, we'll be on again next Wednesday for the third installment of the show. And again, look out on BTSC Behind the Steel Curtain. Normally Wednesday, about an hour or two before the show starts, we'll give you the preview of what's to come on the podcast. So once again, Chris, thank you for being a part of the show. My name is Brian.
Thank you.
Have a great night. And once again, it's a great day to be a Steeler fan.
Yes, indeed.